Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Point of Impact by Lisa Phillips. An old haunt. A deadly killer at work. 15 years after a serial killer tormented them, Addie and Jacob are living very different lives. As an FBI profiler, Addie is on the edge of burnout. When she returns home, she has to face down every nightmare she's ever had. Is the resurgence of a series of all-too-familiar deadly crimes the work of a former ally, or a mastermind who has been pulling her strings all along? Recluse and artist Jacob likes his life. It's how he's managed to cope with who he became all those years ago. But he can't avoid the past any longer. Not when Addie walks back into town and right back into his life. The past returns in a wave of unexplained crimes. Addie and Jacob find themselves at the heart of it all, at the place where their lives were torn apart.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I have Lisa Phillips. She's a USA Today and Top 10 Publishers Weekly bestselling author, and I'm really excited to talk with her. So welcome to my show, Lisa.
Thank you. I was happy to be here.
Yeah, so one of your newest romantic suspense books is Point of Impact. And you had mentioned right before we started recording about this being in a series that was a spinoff of a series that was a spinoff of a series.
Okay. Yeah.
So as we get more complicated, I think it would just be interesting for both our reader listeners and our author listeners, just to kind of talk about the evolution of how you got to this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It really is a spinoff. I think I'm kind of incapable of writing anything that's not connected to everything else in some way, but I just think it's fun. Like as a reader, it's fun to get a glimpse of like, you know, somebody who's a side character, you know, somebody makes a phone call or somebody sees somebody on the street and it's like somebody you know and love and you're like, oh, I remember them. And now they have, you know, two kids and, you know, it's been 3 years since we had their book. And so it's just so fun to see those little snippets of characters later on. And so a couple of years ago, I had my Last Chance County series, which was so much fun. And it's all set in one town. And during that series, it crops up that there's this private security team that lives in town. And so Chevalier Protection Specialist is the next series that spins off from Last Chance County. And then so they still live in Last Chance County. And then that spun off it's kind of like the accountant's office. So what it is like private witness protection for people who were, you know, burned spies, special ops people, and they like they can't show their face, they're in danger, it doesn't matter where they go, so they need a completely clean identity and they have to live completely under the radar, and it's like the government turned their back on these people. And so what this series Last Chance Downrange is set in Benson, Washington, which is a made-up town. And it's kind of like a small-ish city. So in Point of Impact, it's like the establishing of a floor in an apartment building where all these accountant's office clients are going to live. But then it's like the series itself turned into like first responders. The first one's an FBI agent and it's, you know, a local police department. So she's one FBI agent in this town and she has this little like corner office in the police department. And then she gets two more agents. And then book two is actually a character who was in Chevalier. So I pulled him back in, gave him a new start with the accountant's office. And then that one's a reunion romance. And then this third one is one of those FBI agents that showed up and one of the local cops. And then the last one is another character from the last book in Chevalier, who was like a spy that they met. And he's the main character in the fourth downrange book. So they're like all interconnected in the same world. But the Last Chance Downrange, because it's in Benson, it's like a totally new setting and all, you know, as many new characters as I could, just to make it fresh, for, you know, it's hard sometimes when you find a new author and they have so many books, it's like, well, where do I start? And so I try to make it like every book one is a place you can start. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can always go back and read the previous series, but so this one probably more so than the last couple of series, just because it's a whole new place and whole new people. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
So how do you keep everyone straight? This is I'm like, how would I remember who's in who?
Right. So I'll tell you a funny story. So a few years ago, I wrote Sanctuary, which was like a witness protection town. I think I just have a witness protection thing. So they're all like famous people who can't show their faces. So they live in this like secret town in the mountains that you can't get to except by airplane. So in that series, I had a guy, and I think his name was, it was like Trevor or Andy. And I think he was like Trevor in the beginning. And then, you know, in book three, he's sometimes somehow becomes Andy. And then in book five, he's like, well, I changed my name back. Like, I'm in witness protection. I can decide to be called whatever I want. So I totally had to like cover up this guy. Apparently I just completely forgot what his name was. So from that, I kind of learned the value of a series Bible. And so I had a pretty complex series Bible for Last Chance County, just because I knew I needed to keep all these people straight. Because the main character, the guy in book eight, is in book one. And so you track these people all the way. And I still found things. So I had, because I have contracted with Sunrise Publishing to do a spin-off series of Last Chance County about the fire department, which I'm super excited about because those all come out next year. And all the authors are hard at work on their books. And so I had to have Sunrise actually create the series Bible for the series I work on. So they took my hot mess of a series Bible and like laid it all out so everybody can actually understand it now. And then she even found like somebody had adopted three children, and then in the next book I said there were four. So there were still things, so you know, it's never perfect, but you can kind of minimize as much as you can, like I got like name spellings and nicknames and then even like not trying to not use the same last name or the same first name, because that can get really confusing. So yeah
I bet. So I'm sure you're grateful to have that revised. Mm-hmm.
You're like, it's amazing. And now all my authors, I'm like, fill this out. Like, we will all go crazy if you do not write this down.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's funny. Yeah. I mean, I have a hard time. Well, not a hard time, but but paying attention to those details is important, right? For the reader. And, you know, I'm always like, if I don't remember the eye color when I'm doing the rough draft, I'll just write it in all caps, you know, eye color, yes. Go check, because I don't want to put in what I think it is. And then when I'm reading it over again, I'll think, oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or you just kind of skim it and you don't, because I feel like sometimes your brain would just skim things and you're like, wait, I just read two pages and I didn't see anything. Yeah. Which is dangerous. Like if I don't find something wrong with it, then I need to go back and read it again.
Yeah.
And then I'll do that a lot, like just in first draft especially, just to get through it, I'll put like an asterisk and the word last name in all capitals, just because I either didn't figure it out yet or I have to go and pull out another Excel spreadsheet and find it out. But it's so helpful to, like, if you're pulling in a character. So I actually had a couple of the guys from Chevalier show up in the third downrange book, and they're literally, okay, so because book two was one of their friends, And there had been some issues between them, like they thought he had betrayed them, and it just, you know, so there's a lot of conflict between them. And in book three, my main character looks down the hallway and I describe these two guys, and you know exactly who they are from my description. And then the door opens and this guy who lives next door like slams into them and hugs them. And so going back and pulling up that old spreadsheet to get all those character details of, like, you know, he's got big shoulders and the other one's really tall and he's Hispanic, and you know exactly who that is. I know, you know, the readers are going to go, ooh, I know who that is. And then just to see their reunion, even though my main character of that book didn't know who they were, or didn't understand like why that it was, like, for the reader, not for the story. And so it's just cool. It's so much easier to go back and be able to copy and paste a line of description into the new series Bible and then be able to just pull that up, to throw in something fun.
Right. Well, I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only author of my first draft who's like, Deputy One.
Yes.
I don't want to stop and figure out
his name. Little brother. Yes.
Yes. I know. I use that all the time. That's one of my that's one of my favorite tricks to getting that rough draft done, because we can spend so much time finding the right character name and the right, you know, last name, first name, last name. It's not just one name, and making sure that I'm not using another B name because I've used like or whatever letter of the alphabet we tend to gravitate toward. That's funny. Well, I must be doing something right then. If Lisa
That's funny.
Yeah. So, you must really like writing series. What is it about having that interconnectivity, between the, you know, instead of writing standalones, you know, why do you gravitate so much to writing series?
So I actually, this is going to be a roundabout way of answering the question. Yep. So there's something called Better Faster Academy. And so it's Becca Syme. If you've never heard of her, she's a certified Gallup strengths coach, and she runs a whole like courses for writers. So it's strengths for writers, and then write better, faster. And so basically you take this Gallup strengths test, and there's 34 personality strengths, and they'll tell you where you rank 1 to 34. So they love your top five is where they hang out. And then 6 through 10, you like meet one-on-one with your strengths coach, and they talk about, you know, how do you process this based on what your strengths are, like how are you going to get better faster? So it's just about like optimizing your strengths. And so my number one is called Relator, and it's basically a small core group of close relationships. And and one of the things, because she's also an author, she does this little add-on when she explains what the strength is of how this relates to you as a writer. And what it relates to is like this strong sense of community and then interconnected relationships with the characters. And so, and I didn't even realize that this was, you know, something that, you know, I'm like super introvert. I would say I typically don't like people, but in the last few years have really like developed some really close relationships with people, which is really awesome. And so just to see it play out in my books, I think lends itself to series, because you get to see, you know, the characters from book one, you get to see them through 2, 3, 4, you know, getting engaged, and then they're getting married, and now they're having a baby shower. And just to see those, like, you don't leave this person when the book ends, you get to come back and visit with them later. And so I think I like that sense of community, and those relationships.
Oh, that's interesting, Lisa. And I'm sure it kind of, not like explained a lot, like you're a big mystery to yourself, but I'm sure it was kind of to kind of see and go, oh, that's why I like this. This is the way my brain, sometimes as writers, we fight with ourselves too much, you know, trying to make us, especially if we're new at it, I think we're like trying to, well, someone says do the snowflake method. Well, what about what about this? And you try these things and you're like, well, that doesn't feel good, but you figure what everyone else is doing it.
And the person is usually so excited about it because it works for them.
Right.
And so one thing that I read in one of her books, Becca Syme, is that if you're predisposed to like empathy, then you kind of connect with that excitement that they have over, you know, dictation or you got to write every day or, you know, any of those things like you have to do that. You have to write this way. You have to be a pantser. You have to be an outliner. And so you can't, you'll try those things. And then a lot of the time we get frustrated because it doesn't work for us. And so just seeing, you know, the other four of my top five are like executing strengths. Yeah. So it's like getting things done, having, you know, focusing, and all of them have, you know, positive sides and negative sides. But yes, it's really very individual what works for you. And so I try when I, because I work with, you know, newer authors through Sunrise, I try to say, just because it works for me doesn't work mean it's going to work for you. You have to figure out, like, here's some options, figure out your own process, and learn how you work and how you, you know, everybody, everybody's brain comes up with creative ideas differently. And everybody's brain translates that into a page of fiction differently. And so we have to figure out what works for us and then try to optimize that process as much as possible.
Yeah, no, that's such valuable advice, Lisa. For any of, if you're not a writer, to stop, you know, trying to shove ourselves in these other holes that aren't, that we don't, our shape doesn't fit in. And I think that God has created each of us to be, you know, obviously individuals. And, you know, I think it's good to try things. If you're unsure of where you fit, you know, try a few things. But if it's really not working, we need to give ourselves permission to say, yeah, I'm done with that. I'm going to try something else.
Yeah. Or even like, this might not be something that you need, but I need to go and sit by myself in my yard and think. Or think about nothing, or, you know, it's just like all these little things that are like, you know, dwell with one another with understanding. When I learn about me and you learn about you, and then we can say, well, I need this, and then we can have that harmony, and, you know, we know each other better, we can serve each other better.
No, I love that too, because I do a lot of speaking about time management for writers. And one of my most popular talk, writing in the time you've got, to help people realize they have time. But then I always say, I said, here are some suggestions. Now, these are not all going to work for you. You need to kind of look, these are just to kind of either to get you started. If one of them goes, oh, maybe I can do that. Try it.
That's the one. It's like, oh, I want to do that. Or the ones where you're like, don't, like, walk away from that. Don't worry about it.
Right. And just, but then having that, having a starting point to kind of go, okay, what are my goals? Obviously, what's working for me right now is generally is not working. So what can I do to change it? And just in to try and be willing to try things and then discard them, I think can be hard, because sometimes we get discouraged if it didn't work. Well, Lisa's
it works for everybody else. Why is it like Scrivener? So many people love Scrivener and I hated it. Oh, it was a nightmare. I could not handle it.
Yeah, I tried that. And I write because everyone loved it. And I was like, okay.
And then I was like, what is wrong with me? Or like, sometimes it's like, well, why are you wired differently? What is it about you that's wired differently than I, you know, I need linear A, B, C, D. I've used Word my whole life. It's, I don't even have to think about it versus this, like, what do you mean I can put stuff here and then move it around and I can see it? No, no. Give me a post-it.
My stress level was like,
yes, I need poster board and sticky notes and a pen. Like, I will choose paper every single time.
I just have a Word file. I dump it all in there and I'm fine because that's the way my brain works. So
mine's like notebooks.
Well, if I could read my writing enough,
I could that is sometimes. Sometimes I find I'll write a ton of notes and then I'll write the book. And I was like, I never went back and looked at my notes. Like, what did I think her spiritual problem was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, this has been fun, Lisa, but we are out of time. So thank you for being on my show.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's fun.
Thank you for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I've been chatting with Lisa Phillips. She's a USA Today and Top 10 Publishers Weekly bestselling author. And you can find out more about Lisa in the notes with this podcast. And stay tuned for an excerpt from Point of Impact.
Now an excerpt from Point of Impact by Lisa Phillips.
No one anticipated when I did that first book, the one with my grandfather and his people, that it would hit as big as it did. I gave a lot to the tribe, scholarship funds and medical programs. Then I built myself the haven I needed.
Except it had been trashed, and the privacy he'd had was gone now, even if he put it all to rights. Jacob swallowed.
Being able to do that for other people would be another gift I can give. They'll pay rent.
Russ lifted both hands.
This isn't about freebies.
Sure. Jacob rotated the cup. I'll charge them fair prices. Except rent in his zip code was nuts, so he'd lower the prices however far he wanted. At least enough to cover taxes and utility bills. After all, he owned the property outright. The front door opened, and he heard it close.
Russ?
It was Addie.
Kitchen!
Jacob started out of surprise in the middle of twisting around to look for her, to get a glimpse, which would have been fine if his abdomen hadn't been an angry mess of stitches.
Sorry.
Jacob shook his head.
Don't worry about it.
He swallowed some coffee to keep from hurling while Addie rounded the table and crouched in front of him.
Hey.
She set her hand on his knee. Jacob put the coffee down.
Hey.
Russ's chair scraped across the floor. He was halfway to the door when Addie said,
Hey.
Russ turned back.
Austin.
What?
Addie shook her head.
I'll tell Mona.
Addie bit her lip. Russ left the room. He didn't want to get into inane small talk. But as with Russ, the last thing he wanted to talk about were her case details. They had to, though.
What happened?
Addie tugged a chair over.
There's coffee.
She nodded, but didn't move for it.
I'm not going to sleep anyway. I'll get some in a sec.
What happened since... all of it, I guess.
She squeezed his hand. Jacob didn't let go.
Well, I found Mona's boyfriend, the kid who's obsessed with us. He's dead, but I have no idea yet if it's the same killer.
I wasn't sure this could get more complicated, but apparently it has.
I'll head to the office shortly and get an early start.
She shrugged.
We'll figure it out.
Jacob couldn't help thinking something was coming. It was like watching a storm gather on the horizon.
Will you promise me you'll be careful?
The last thing he wanted was for her to get caught up in something that was even a flavor of everything they'd been through, especially alone.
Maybe I should have become a cop.
Addie tipped her head to the side.
You think that's the only way to protect me from the dark?
Before he could answer, she squeezed his hand.
I don't need a cop, Jacob. There are plenty of those in my life, and it's nothing like what we have right here.
I'd kiss you, but I need a shower, and I don't think I'll be leaning forward for a month.
The words were out before he could call them back. Instead of getting the brush off, he watched her cheeks pink. She lifted off her seat. He figured she was going for coffee to break the moment, but she moved to him and leaned a hand on the table. She smiled a second before she lowered her head, touched her lips to his. It was nothing like what they'd had before, but there was a familiarity about it, like déjà vu in the best way. An old familiar sweater on a cold day. Then he lost all thought as she shifted, turned her head, and the kiss deepened. Jacob reached up and touched her cheek, tasted the promise in her, the hope that existed between them that he'd never found anywhere else. She leaned back and he heard her breathy sigh. Jacob opened his eyes, aware of the tug of a smile on his face. Addie felt the same on hers. Definitely not a cop. Jacob cleared his throat and finished his coffee. Need a refill? Before he could answer, Mona rushed in with tears rolling down her face. What happened? Addie shook her head. You don't want the details, and I can't give them to you when it's an open investigation. You have to tell me what happened. I can't tell you. Jacob shifted his lower body around along with his upper body. You could sit with us and talk it out. The teen knew their friend Becca had died in the same incident when they were taken. Hank's girlfriend had suffered and died at the hands of a demented killer. Jacob had been pushed to his end and nearly broke. Only the arrival of the police had saved their lives. Otherwise, they would have been buried with Becca. Would Hank have gone on without them, believing it was his fault they were dead and he was the only survivor? Maybe he believed exactly that about Becca's death.
You know that we know what it feels like to lose someone.
Jacob couldn't push out those thoughts about Hank. Where was his friend?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.